The following is a paid advertisement of St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedics. References to any specific product, services, or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by St. Anthony Hospital, Carroll Broadcasting, or its advertisers. The views expressed by the host or guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Welcome to the St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedic Show with Dr. Richard Godding. Dr. Godding specializes in joint preservation, reconstruction, and replacement surgery, and brings over 25 years of orthopedic excellence to St. Anthony Hospital and to the Carroll area. For more information about Dr. Godding, his practice, or St. Anthony Orthopedics, go to stanthonyhospital.org or make an appointment by calling 712-794-5536.
Good Sunday morning, Iowa. It's Dr. Rick Godding, and thank you for choosing to spend a little bit of time with me here today. And yes, carnivore diet still works. It's the first time the scale has been below 250 in months, and I started over full steam. So what I did, though, is I'm adding in fermented foods. So fermented pickles. Now, these are not the Vlasic pickles you get at the store. Those just have vinegar. That's a salted pickle. And sauerkraut, the sauerkraut you get at the store typically is not fermented. So I went and got some fermented pickles, some fermented sauerkraut, and I'm adding in a little kefir, which is it's kind of like a liquid yogurt that you can drink. And I'm sorry if that just made you sick and you don't like yogurt. But I put a tiny little bit of honey in it. And so those are my only cheats. Still eat a little bit of cheese, not much. I've cut way, way back on the cheese, but it's mostly meat and eggs, and then a little bit of kefir, a little bit of, so I'll get like some bratwurst and throw it in some sauerkraut. And yes, I'll mustard. Mustard's on the menu. It just makes it easier. And kind of like hot sauce, like sriracha and things like that. I don't count those as cheating. And again, you know, so this year, from right where I am, my goal is to lose 25 pounds, and then I'll be a way less than I did at my lowest when I was full steam carnivore, which ended about a year ago. And then I kind of started doing what I call wobbly carnivore. And then I pretty much did wobbly carnivore for a year. I never really just said, forget it. I'm going back. I'm having pizza and donuts. I'm just too old to throw in the towel like that. And, you know, when you get older, you start to recognize, and I'll be 56 this year. So I know some of you say, oh, spring chicken. But, you know, I mean, it's the oldest I've ever been. So I see patients in my office. Saw a guy this morning, 70 years old, booked him for scheduled a knee replacement for him. I mean, he's vibrant, he's hunting, and he's, you know, still working and doing this stuff. And I'm like, that, you know, that's where I want to be at 70. I don't want to be like some of my other patients at 70 that are, you know, 60 pounds overweight and have a hard time moving around, and they're, you know, diabetes and all this stuff. So, you know, you have control over that now, and you have control over where you will be over the next however many years. And again, you know, I don't say I'm an advocate of the carnivore diet. I guess I used to be, since I had a YouTube channel, like, still up, but about my carnivore experience, and it just dramatically transformed my health. And, you know, I lost 50 pounds, again, gained 25 back, lost enough 5 now, so I've only gained 20 of that back. So I'm still down 30 from where I started. I haven't done my beginning of the year checkup, but last year, after having done carnivore a year, my triglycerides went down. So triglycerides are a huge marker of metabolic health. And when you mean by metabolic health, it's like, you know, there's psychological health, you know, there's cardiac health, and then there's GI health. So you're kind of like breaking it down to your metabolic health. Well, that's basically how you process the food. That's your metabolism, right? So your metabolic health, you know, so a dysfunction in your metabolic health would include diabetes, right? And it would include other problems like that. And if you have a high triglyceride, you have a much greater chance of having problems with diabetes and problems with the heart and things like that. So my triglycerides went way, way down. My LDL to HDL ratio improved dramatically. My overall cholesterol went down. My resting blood sugar went down. You know, it really, really, really improved my health. And it's, again, I don't at all, never did advocate that, oh, this is the only way, you must do it carnivore way. No, not at all. But it worked for me, because one of the issues that I have is if you're adding carbs into the mix in any significant way, man, well, some people can maybe eat a handful of chips, but a handful of chips is a warm-up for another handful of chips for me. They say it right on the chip container, no one can eat just one. well, I can't even eat just one handful because they're just so salty and crunchy and tasty. So I just have to avoid them altogether. And if this is the way I live the rest of my life, where I do carnivore for 6, 8, 10 months a year and I get myself there, and then I do sort of a mixed bag of carnivore and keto and low carb for the next year, and maybe I gain a little weight back. I mean, maybe that's how I do it. There's never been a point in my life when I could ever forget about my weight. I'm just not built that way. My metabolism is naturally not in a state that is going to allow me to ever just turn my back on it and say, hey, that worked. I've not been interested in the Ozempic and the tirzepatide. That's just my own personal choice. I have some people, both in my professional and my family life, who have had tremendous life-altering transformations using those. And so I think that if you are going to use those, what seems to jump out is that you got to get enough protein so that a lot of the weight that you're losing is not muscle. And they have people who, I've seen these doctors talk about, you know, doctors who are in kind of the weight management game, talk about patients who will maybe lose 50 pounds, but they'll lose 10 pounds of muscle, and then their muscle to fat ratio actually worsened. So you got to be careful with that. If you're going to be on those, I would highly recommend exercising and making sure you get enough protein. What they call the GLP-1 inhibitors, the tirzepatide and the Ozempic and Wegovy. Can't remember the tirzepatide. I think tirzepatide. Anyway, you know the names. You know, but again, we're still in that early. It's only been, I'm recording this on the 12th. It's only New Year's Day. It was only, you know, 11 days ago. It's still time. If you didn't start, there's still time to start a project for the year. It's still super early in the year. It's going to be off and on for the next week or so. You can get outside and walk if that's what you do, but figure out a place to get some exercise in the winter and work on your diet. And if you're not ready to make a big, huge thing, I have had patients who said, you know, all I did, like they'll come in and they'll tell me that they need a knee replacement. And I'll say, well, you know, if you look at the statistics, the level of obesity that you're at can tend towards having worse outcomes. So I don't really want to start at that type of a disadvantage. And so I give them, you know, the talk and, you know, here's, you know, you can talk to your doctor. You can go on the GLP-1s. You could try the carnivore diet, the Atkins diet. You could try the Mediterranean diet. You know, could try Jenny Craig or one of these other things. And I have had several patients come back to me over the years and they say, you know, the only thing I did was I gave up hardcore sugar, gave up my sodas, and I gave up, you know, candy, and I lost 40, 50 pounds. I mean, you just don't realize how bad that stuff is for you. I mean, it's so bad. You know, and that's not to say never drink a soda again or never have a cookie again. But, you know, if you're the amount of sugar in a soda is more sugar than you should have an entire day. So if you have a soda, let's say 2 or 3, oh my gosh, you're and the way that it affects your blood sugar. So different chemicals affect you at different rates, right? So that's why, like, some drugs that we administer, we give them orally, and some of them we give them IV because, you know, the different chemicals work at different rates through different routes. And even sugar, if you're drinking, especially American soda, so you're having corn syrup instead of cane sugar, and corn syrup has a higher glycemic index, I believe, than cane sugar. And so you're just basically mainlining the sugar into your body. You got to look at a soda as at least as unhealthy as a cigarette, easily. Because I can tell you, if you drank 20 sodas a day, you'd be a wreck real fast. You would probably kill yourself in 6 months. I don't know. But I don't know if you can even do that. That's a lot. But the point is, if you just took, you know, there's 60 grams in a soda. If you did that 20 times, so that's 1,200 grams of sugar a day. Yeah, I mean, you would probably die pretty quick in a matter of months. Certainly, I don't know how you would live a year. So sodas are as bad for you as cigarettes, you know. But, I mean, I think if you smoked one cigarette a day, it might not kill you. You know, it's like that. It's like, I mean, it's a bad analogy because cigarettes, we know there's nothing good about them. They're totally bad. But, you know, you could say the same thing about sodas. And again, it's all a scale of, and nobody, I don't think anybody smokes one cigarette a day. I don't think that's not how smoking seems to work. I'm just making the analogy of when you look at a soda, you got to think that's as bad for me as a cigarette. Okay, well, maybe I'll have one today and it's not going to kill me. But if you're going to have 3 or 4 a day, you got to start thinking, wow, this is really, really tough. I don't know. I think just in the beginning of the year, I really get excited about using this year to improve myself and improve the years following. Like, you know, I have good energy. I feel good. I want that to happen I want that to last as long as it possibly can. And you should want that too. when I see patients come in and, you know, that maybe they have an arthritic knee, but the rest of their body is just in terrible, terrible shape. I mean, they're way overweight and then maybe they're smoking, this kind of stuff. I'm like, I can help them with the knee. But unless you fix all that other stuff, it's really not even going to be worthwhile to do the knee. Plus, those other things make doing a knee replacement riskier. The big risks we have with knee replacement are smoking, of course, diabetes, obesity. Those are the three big ones that make joint replacements more dangerous and more risky. And so diabetes, if you're going to have a joint replacement and you have diabetes, you're going to want to have your hemoglobin A1C below 7. So that's the marker of sort of long-term view. If you stick your finger and you get that blood sugar and it's, you know, maybe it's 110 or 140 or whatever, hopefully it's not too much higher than that, or you should probably go see your doctor. But that's just a snapshot of how much sugar is flowing through your blood at that point. The hemoglobin A1C kind of looks at the average of the last 3 months. And the way it does that is, so hemoglobin is part of the blood cell. It's specifically the part of the blood cell that exchanges oxygen. So oxygen comes in your lungs, the red blood cell, hemoglobin comes into the capillaries in the lung, which are the real tiny vessels where only one cell can fit through. And then with the wall of the capillary, it will exchange the hemoglobin portion of that red blood cell, will exchange the carbon dioxide from your body and exchange that for oxygen in the lungs. So the lungs bring the oxygen in, that oxygen gets traded for carbon dioxide, and then the lungs breathe the carbon dioxide out. So what happens is the red blood cell is going to take that oxygen then, and it's going to take it to whatever tissue. Maybe it's going to take it to your skin. Maybe it's going to take it to your heart, wherever. And then the heart or the skin or whatever organ is going to take that oxygen from the lungs off of that hemoglobin, and it's going to transfer it to the cells in there. So the heart cell is going to take the oxygen out of the bloodstream and put it into its own cell, and then the cell is going to use that for what we call metabolism. That's kind of how the cell is generating its energy and doing the functions that it does. If that muscle contracts, it's going to takes energy to contract. Well, that energy is going to come from carbohydrates, and that then the carbohydrates are going to use that oxygen to break that carbohydrate down into more energy, and then as a byproduct, it's going to have carbon dioxide, and that's going to go back out. So that was, got a little deeper into the physiology than I thought I was going to there. But so the hemoglobin is the portion of the red blood cell that exchanges oxygen for carbon dioxide in the lungs and carbon dioxide for oxygen in the tissue. As you're drinking these sodas or eating sugar, or even if you're eating protein and it gets broken down into carbohydrates, because that does happen, protein does get broken down into carbohydrates. So if you're on an all-protein diet, it's not that you're not getting carbohydrates. Those proteins are going to get broken down into carbohydrates. And they have just, your body will metabolize that food into the different functions that it wants to use it. So as the sugar is in the bloodstream, it's going to attach to the red blood cell, and some of it's going to attach to the hemoglobin. So we've found, doctors that study these things, found that you can measure the percentage of the hemoglobin that is covered with sugar, and that will give you an average of how the sugar has been over the last 3 months. And so you need to get that below 7 if you're going to have a knee replacement. The body mass index, you need to get that below 40. And that's basically height divided by weight. But I mean, there's a formula there, but that's more or less what it is. And the other is, you know, quitting smoking. So those are the big three things that if we can control those, you know, we can just reduce the risks overall of having a knee replacement. So, you know, so not that everybody's going to be getting healthier so that they can have a knee replacement, but I guess my point of what I was saying is, hey, listen, there's a lot of good reasons to get healthier. And one of the things that I found is if you lose a lot of weight, your knees might just feel better. I've had patients over the years come in and I said, well, look, I mean, you know, I'm looking at the chart and you got to lose 100 pounds before we can do your knee replacements. They come back in a year later, man, doc, I lost 100 pounds, but my knees don't hurt anymore. Because, you know, the knees are just carrying that weight. So try to take this opportunity in the beginning of the year to get yourself healthier. Maybe what you could do is if you have pain in your body, try losing weight as a I mean, when I say pain in your body, I don't mean in your, like, your gut or anything. I mean, like, if you have pain in your foot, pain in your knee, pain in your hip, in your weight-bearing portions especially, but even in your shoulder, if you have pain there, maybe take this opportunity to lose some weight so that you will carry less weight. And then there's also the fact that fat cells in your body produce inflammatory mediators, things that cause inflammation in the body. So the fewer fat cells you have and the less fat that there is in them, the less overall inflammation you have, and so therefore the less pain and damage on your joints. Because one of the things that we use to treat joint pain is an anti-inflammatory, right? I mean, it's just one of those things. It all works together. The healthier you are, the healthier every part of your body can be, and that includes your knees, shoulders, hips, ankles, feet, and all that. And they're all very closely related to your overall health. So take this early time here in January and, you know, maybe go talk to your doctor and say, you know, this year I'm going to turn my health in a better direction. Even if you've been doing it, you know, double down, you know, work harder on it. Because one thing that as I do get older, like I said, I'm 4 months away from being 56. You know, nothing else matters. If you have your health, you have everything. If you don't have your health, everything else matters less. I won't say you have nothing because, you know, you can have a wonderful family and all these other things and still have bad health. And sometimes your bad health is nothing you can even, you know, just bad luck. But control what you can control. Make your body the healthiest that it can be. And even if you have some sort of a chronic disease, especially if it's diabetes or something, you know, working on these things is going to make your life overall better. So kind of a health pep talk with a little bit of a review of physiology and the risk factors for joint replacement and how to mediate them was today's show. So thank you again for coming along with me, and I will certainly return, and you have a blessed week, Iowa.
This has been the St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedic Show with Dr. Richard Godding. For more information about Dr. Godding, his practice, or St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedics, go to www.stanthonyhospital.org or make an appointment by calling 712-794-5536.